So all this bipartisan politics and agreement regarding criminal justice reform and sentencing reform and prison reform we were just talking about with Todd Zwillick, it's focused so far mostly on nonviolent drug offenders. President Obama commuted the sentences of 46 offenders, but they were nonviolent drug offenders. That was earlier this month. 86% of inmates are serving time in the state criminal justice system, out of the federal system entirely, and more than half of those inmates are in for violent crimes. So a significant reduction in the incarceration rate is going to mean that we'll have to take a look at violent offenders and the way we think about violence and punishment and how those people will be treated after they leave prison. Joining us is John Pfaff, professor at Fordham Law School. John, this is the real nut to crack, right?
Exactly. Like you said, about a majority of our – more than a majority of people in prison are in prison for violent crimes, and most of those who serve long sentences are violent offenders. So when Obama said prison growth has been driven by locking up nonviolent offenders for very long periods of time, that was kind of wrong on two fronts. Right? It's locking up violent offenders, and even then not for that long, but the long sentences tend to be violent, not drug cases.
Now, as a non-criminal, I have a notion of the difference between violence and nonviolence, but as a lawyer is there such a hard and fast rule on who's in prison for being violent and who's in prison for maybe something that's not quite so violent?
Right. I think there are two important points. One is to realize that violence is a legal term of art in a way. It doesn't necessarily – when we say violence, we think serious physical harm, sort of as sort of the popular view of it.
When I hear violence, I think guns. I mean, I think guns and people were shot.
Guns, murder, arson – no, murder, rape, aggravated assault. But in many states – things that are classified as being an official violent crime don't necessarily always result in harm. So for example, a physical harm. So for example, New York State classifies certain burglaries where no one is hurt, no one's even home. But if you break into a place where someone could be home, that can count as a violent crime. That said, of those who are in prison for officially violent crimes, a good fraction, more than half, are there for what we think of as sort of your traditional aggressively harmful acts, murder, aggravated assault, robbery.
Before we get to murder, are there models around the world for dealing with the nonviolent or not so violent burglaries in sentencing that would get perhaps the low-hanging fruit out of long-term incarceration?
I think so. I mean, I think states have started doing that here. They're reclassifying theft, reclassifying certain degrees of these low-level offenses. But so far, that's all they're doing. And that's true at the feds. It's true at the state level too, that even the big state reforms, there's much more happening at the states than in Congress. They still tend to be focused on these nonviolent cases that won't get us as far as we need to really make cuts.
So as Todd Zwillick mentioned, the violent crime is down in
Correct.
The United States. So are the people that we're seeing in jail now for violent crimes, do they represent a snapshot of an America that was decades ago that in a sense, if we keep them in prison – they'll eventually, work their way through in attrition or parole, or they'll die in prison, and then the population will just go down naturally? Or do we need to do something aggressive now?
We need to do something aggressive now because most prisoners are not in prison for long periods of time. So if you look at, say, like the number of people admitted to prison in 2003, only 3% of them are still in prison in 2013. We have this view of people being sent to prison, just dying in prison, and that happens. But most prisoners are serving relatively short sentences. So what we see in prison today kind of in some ways reflects what's going on today. It's more about keeping people from going into prison, less trying to get out those who have been there for long periods of time.
How do you deal with a violent offender? I mean, how do you keep them from being classified as a citizen who no one wants to have anything to do with? And maybe that is the answer. We don't want to have anything to do with someone who is accused of attempted murder or convicted of attempted murder.
Right. I mean, I think the challenge we face is that we have this view of sort of violent offenders as just violent people. It's a very static concept. You are a violent person. And that just doesn't seem to match what the data show. People age into being violent and they age out of being violent. So someone who's very violent when they're 18 will be less violent when they're 30 and even less violent when they're 40. Again, they might be more violent when they're 40 than other 40-year-olds, right? They're still more violent, but they'll be substantially less so. This is not just something you sort of are throughout your whole life. So the sense that like, if you've committed a violent crime at 18, let's just give up and lock you up permanently, it's a very naive view of what psychologists and sociologists have shown how human behavior actually moves over the course of a person's life.
Does that work to basically sentence someone to, all right, you're going to lose your your teenage years. You're going to lose your youth, which is a significant punishment.
Right. And it's actually even more complicated than that, because one of the ways people tend to desist from crime are through things like getting a job, getting married, having children. These are shown to help lead people out of crime. So if you spend your youth in prison, your ability to get a job, get married, have children, that's impeded when you get released. So it's a very difficult issue to figure out how to balance these things. But our discussion currently doesn't even begin to engage with this idea that part of the way out of crime is to not lock you up, but to try to help you figure out a way to get your life on a different path.
Do you see the discourse in Congress moving along the lines of, all right, what do we do to change the behavior of these people? In other words, taking a kind of rehab model as opposed to a lock them up and keep our streets safe model, which was what the 70s was all about.
Right. It's hard to say with Congress. And the thing about Congress is that the politics of Congress are very different than the politics in the states.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the states.
Right. So what makes the states different is that crime is very, very concentrated in cities, within cities, within blocks. And those high crime areas are very much better represented in the state level. So the costs of punishment are much more better. You know, the politicians better reflect sort of the costs and benefits of punishment. So I think you're getting slightly smarter policies at the state level than the federal level. And in fact, this brand new federal law they're proposing, the Safe Justice Act, I think it's got a lot to say for it. But almost all of its innovative ideas are things the states have done first and that Congress is then adopting for itself.
So look at the states as the innovative model here and the innovative sort of place for really changing sentencing for violent offenders. And then maybe some federal models will emerge. John Pfaff, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
John Pfaff is a professor at Fordham Law School talking about sentencing changes for violent offenders.